The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome to Raising Good Humans. I'm Dr. Aliza Pressman, and today's episode is with the brilliant author Frank Bruni, who's been a prominent journalist for more than three decades, including more than 25 years at the New York Times. And he is also a professor at Duke University, where he teaches in the School of Public Policy. And he has a new book out. It is so timely, called The Age of Grievance. I'm so excited to share this episode with you as we navigate a time when it feels like we have to figure out some balance between being able to do the enormous good of saying when there are urgently moral changes that need to occur, while at the same time being able to step back and say, wait a second, everything can't be a grievance, and everything cannot be so highly charged that we stop hearing, we stop listening, we stop talking to each other, we stop being able to have reasonable conversations. And so what we see so much of are the extremes. And we're raising kids at a time when we want to make sure that that is not their model and that is not their capacity. I loved this conversation. I can't wait to share it with you. This is a little bit different than my usual. As always, I love when you take the time to write a review and tell me what you liked, or DM me with private constructive feedback on at Raising Good Humans podcast. And don't forget, I also have a free Substack. You can sign up on dralizapressman.substack.com. And there's also, for $4.99 a month, a parent group for anybody who joins the Substack. We just meet on Zoom, have a candid conversation. Please join us if you want to dive deeper into any of these discussions. I know this is a difficult conversation that we're having today, and I know there are difficult conversations going on all the time. What I'm aiming to do is help us think more clearly about how we have these conversations so that we not only can model for our children, but we can have some guidance as to how they can navigate these waters. We are coming up in a very intense election cycle. There's been so much news that's been making people feel so polarized. Let's have this conversation with Frank Bruni. It's so helpful. It's so thought-provoking. And I really encourage you to then have conversations with your kids so that we can do better. So I'm going to dive right in, and I want to just ask you to define grievance.
You know, the definition I would give today, and the definition that's consistent with its use in the book, is a complaint, you know, about a problem, an injustice, sometimes very real, sometimes invented, that is being expressed in an often indiscriminate and often overwrought way, that in fact drags our conversations downward rather than lifting them up, that raises the temperature of our debates rather than lowering it. And the reason I say grievance now is if you kind of went online right now and you searched like appearances of the word grievance over the past week in the media, you would almost always find the connotation to be negative, because that's just the way the word has evolved. If you go back in time, the word grievances is in the First Amendment. Grievance used to simply mean, you know, a complaint about mistreatment and injustice. And often when it appeared, it was referring to something very necessary, very urgent, and a cause that was righteous. I think we now have causes, those are the good things, and we have grievances, which are the indiscriminate, overwrought things.
It seems like it maps quite beautifully to just kind of the direction that we've gone in general, about everything, that just something that has a kernel of what we were hoping for in the movement of the world has turned into this something that has become too big and taken it to a place that isn't serving anybody.
That's exactly right. And that's the whole problem, right? We have so much work to do as a country, as a society, to be better, to be fairer, to be juster. And that work isn't served when everybody is shouting as loudly as they can, when everybody is entering the public square with the question, first and foremost, how have I been wronged? What am I owed? Who's to blame? And how do I take my revenge on them? Those are not questions that get us where we really want to go. Those are questions that drive people apart, that give the people who disagree with you and are standing in your way a reason to reject you. And that's the problem. There's no perspective. There's no proportion. There's absolutely no nuance. And because of all those things, there's no grace.
So before we get into what I think you have described as kind of the antidote to this, and I'm so excited to talk about that, I have felt this past, you know, it's interesting because I'm talking about raising kids and we're talking about raising them, but so much of it is just we're raising ourselves. And so we have this amazing opportunity in front of our kids to make a decision about how we're moving through the world and how we're having these really hard conversations and what we're doing. And now we see, and there's so much, it's so public facing now. It's so out there. And social media has, as you've talked about, just amplified this. How do we get hold of ourselves in this time that's so fraught, where we have this inclination to shout so loudly and be so righteous? And some of that really, really is important, but not all of it. And the way that we're right. doing it is kind of shutting other people down to the point where they're kind of just from even the biology of it, like your brain is going into fight, flight, or freeze. It's flooded with cortisol because you're being screamed at mm-hmm. and horrible things are being said. So then even if there was something righteous at the center of it, it's gone now because you've shut out the conversation. You've shut everything down. I'm worried about our kids watching this election cycle that's coming up. Like, I'm worried about how we're supposed to navigate this, but I'm more worried about it because I don't know that the adults know what to do. And I think you have laid out kind of an amazing approach and plan. So I wanted to kind of hear about that.
Well, I'm so delighted you talk about how we adults behave. And I'm so delighted to be talking with you because I do think one of the great hopes here is that we can encourage and point our children in a better direction, right? I mean, I don't know how much I'm going to change a 65-year-old who's been spending the last 20 right. years screaming at his, her, or their political opponents. But when I was listening to you just then, I was thinking, we know, parents know, that their children model their behavior when it comes to eating. And I know a lot of parents who try to eat healthy, exercise, take good care of themselves, not just because it's good for them, but because they know their children are watching, taking note, and are very likely going to imitate that, right? That is yep. just as true when it comes to political engagement, when it comes to the way in which we talk to and treat the people who disagree with us. Children are watching and modeling that as well. If our campuses, in some instances, have become overwrought, and by the way, this is a minority of campuses and a minority of students, and we in the media don't always do a good job of making clear that this is not the norm. You know, this is the most theatrical, you know, conflict-driven stuff. But if our campuses do sometimes become overwrought, and if the students on them do sometimes become illiberal, intolerant of the people who disagree with them, well, gee, I wonder where they got that. Maybe they're watching the U.S. Congress, right? So it's so important that we get a hold of this and that we examine and tweak our own behavior, not only because of what that will do in real time to the ability to solve problems, pass legislation, et cetera, but children are watching us. They are taking cues from us. They are imitating us. And, you know, cliche alert, they are the future.
Yeah, I mean, we spend a lot of time criticizing young people right now. And I went to Columbia for graduate school, so I've been watching that more closely. I am quite thrown off by the lack of nuance and the fact that, you know, we haven't been able to distinguish this very important need to be able to voice when something is unjust. And also that it's incredibly unjust to use language that is harmful to others in a way that's like, calling for their death or something that is just unacceptable. But that, like, it seems like the adults are kind of leading the charge in a different kind of way than I think we have seen in the past. I'm not sure if that's true or if it just seems like even professors and teachers, like, I feel like we've lost the plot as the adults. And so, of course, young people, and to your point, like in the House of Congress and everywhere and in our elections, I'm not sure how we can kind of blame young people right now.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a panic button that if we don't seem like we're screaming, that we're not doing enough.
We have somehow gotten to this place, and it's the whole motivation for the book. It's the whole preoccupation of the book. We've gotten to this place where people feel the way you win a political argument is simply to shout louder than the other person, to use more yeah. flamboyant language, to paint the world in starker shades of black and white. And to the point of what you were just saying, too many of the adults that are rushing to the scene, both literally and metaphorically here, are doing it to score political points or to signal which side they're on, right? And this is a complicated right. situation that doesn't break down easily.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And they're raising the temperature, and in the process, absolutely not serving those students and modeling the wrong kind of behavior. I just finished my third year on the faculty at Duke. I teach a full load of courses. I'm a full professor there. So I've now taught hundreds of students. And I can tell you that when you say to students, when you begin the semester with a very, very clear message that you value disagreement, respectful disagreement, that you think you're going to have a better educational atmosphere and a better society if there is a diversity of viewpoints and a discussion of them that is civil and open-minded and respectful, I have found my classrooms, that is the form they take. And I have found that students, given that encouragement, given that cue, will respond in a positive way. I don't think nearly enough of the adults in their lives are doing that, because we're actually indulging our own passions and our own grievances rather than asking ourselves the question of what is the proper behavior for progress and for a healthy democracy.
And now a quick break so I can tell you about my sponsors. KiwiCo is so helpful when you're just looking for something that is off screens, something that's fun and easy, and something that you don't have to work to put together. So whether you're staying at home or heading out on summer explorations, definitely bring KiwiCo with you. KiwiCo is inviting kids and kids at heart to enjoy their first ever summer adventure series. So kids from 2 years old to teens can receive 6 hands-on science and art project kits over the 6 weeks with enriching content and fun activities to accompany each project. I'm still waiting for my newest box to arrive, so I can't wait to tell you all about it. Last one we did was making ice cream, the science of ice cream and the deliciousness of ice cream. What kid is going to say no to that? The Summer Adventure Series is a very personalized experience, and you would be surprised at how high quality the materials are too. They're real engineering, science, and art projects for kids. Build the best summer ever with KiwiCo. Get 20% off your Summer Adventure Series at kiwico.com/summerhumans. That's 20% off your summer adventure at kiwico.com/summerhumans. Okay, so I'm a very coffee-oriented person. So when there is something that can be as appealing as coffee, but without just dousing me in too much caffeine, I'm in. So now we have mud water. So I gave mud water a try to take the place of coffee and not worry about having an energy headache or a crash. It tastes delicious. It feels like I had that warm break that I just crave. Mud Water is a healthy habits brand, best known for its popular coffee alternative, Rise Cacao. It's got 4 functional mushrooms with only a fraction of the caffeine as a cup of coffee. So you get natural energy without the jitters or the crash of coffee, and you're going to have a lot of it. The cacao and chai gives a hint of caffeine and a little hot chocolate flavor. Lion's mane for focus. Cordyceps to promote natural energy, and there's just so much good stuff. Mudwater is hooking up my show with a special offer. So if you go to mudwater.com/humans, you can get a free frother and $20 off. The frother just makes it like a little bit more of a treat. That's mudwtr.com/humans for a free frother and $20 off. That's mudwater.com/humans. How, as a professor, when you're talking to young people, do you help everyone distinguish between disagreement, respectful disagreement, and when it gets to a point where it's not about feeling comfortable, because that's got to end, but it's about causing harm? Like, where's the fine line and the nuance there that you help them with?
I don't think it's that fine a line. That's a great question, but I don't think it's that fine a line. What I say to them, both explicitly and I hope in the way I steer discussions, is when disagreeing with someone and being impassioned in your presentation of your viewpoint, that's great. That's human. That's political engagement. I salute it. Telling them they're evil, condescending to them, damning them, etc., that goes far over the line. You can't know how they arrived at the viewpoints that they arrived at. You can't know what they've been through in their own lives. There may be very rational reasons why they have what to you seems like an irrational viewpoint and may objectively be one. It's the old, to go back to the kind of one of the greatest cliches of religion, hate the sin, not the sinner. That framing also applies to our political debates, to the classroom. And that's what I think you say to them. You cross the line when you're not merely hating the sin, but you're hating the sinner. And here's the thing. If your goal is to persuade that person of the rightness of your viewpoint and to have your viewpoint be the one that prevails in the public arena, you are not going to make that happen by telling them they're awful and evil, by getting their backs up, by driving them further away. What they're going to do is they're going to hate you back just as hard or harder, and you're not going to make any progress.
You just kind of asked a question in that answer, which is like, where are you coming from when you're, you know, like being curious? Where are you coming from when you're talking about this? Like, because how can we presume to know why someone thinks the way they do or feels the way they do without understanding their lived experience? And then maybe from that, you can have a real conversation. But how do we get there when we're seeing, like, I think we can take this week as a perfectly good example of we've kind of lost the plot. Everything seems to be sort of out of control. Part of that is media. Part of that is that social media feeds off of the worst of the worst. And part of it is because it's really not great. So what can we take from today to use as conversation points and questions that we can ask our young people to get them thinking more in this humbler mindset, which I'm going to let you talk all about? I think it sounds like you have some of those questions.
Well, there are a lot of questions I think we have to ask ourselves. I think we have to ask ourselves when we're angry about something, right? Are we actually intoxicated by that anger, right? Is that anger mushrooming out of control because it feels like a rush and a high? And I talk in the book about science that shows that kind of your brain on anger is like your brain on drugs. So I think we have to ask ourselves how much of the fury that's building within me, how much of the intensity of it as it grows is akin to a drug and is traveling away from the actual merits of the situation. I think we need to ask ourselves, and this kind of is a bit repetitive of what we're just saying, the people on the other side who I find so often disagree with me, why do they feel the way they do? Right? Doesn't mean I have to yield to it. It doesn't mean I have to change my values or principles. But before I begin to engage with them, before I begin to articulate my anger, before I decide on the right intensity for it, like, where are they coming from and why is that the way it is? Am I getting anywhere with what I'm doing, right? I mean, is this actually leading anywhere? If what this is about is a set of goals and principles that I want to see put into action, is this path taking me there? We need to ask, like, a young person, any person needs to ask themselves all those questions. And also, and this perhaps is a little bit getting ahead of it and segue into what I know you want to talk about in terms of humility, Am I demanding that the world conform and be tailored to precisely to my liking? And if I am, is that reasonable? Is that mature? Is that right? I think we're a spoiled country in many ways, and we're living in a spoiled time in many ways. And what I mean by that is we've been so blessed in so many ways. This is an era, so much needs to be better. There are so many people who've been left behind, and we should never, ever be ignorant of that. That said, we're living, if you're looking through the lens of history, if you're taking a wide angle view, we're living in very prosperous, peaceful times, relatively speaking. We're very blessed. And I think that has sometimes led us to a place where instead of appreciating that and trying to build on it in a kind of sensible way, we demand a world that is exactly the way we want it. Nobody gets that. Nobody should expect that. And if we're telling our children that anything that doesn't go the way they want it to in life is an insult, is an indignity, is a wrong that they should be angry about, well, we're setting them up for a lifetime of misery. Because as all of us know, when we get as deep into this life as I've gotten, I mean, I'm 59, I hope I have many years left, but I know that the world deals you curveballs and surprises that are not what you want. And the best way through them and the recipe for contentment is not to treat each of those things as a tragedy. And I think we're sometimes sending a different message.
I think those messages, I'm just thinking about like how we got here, and sometimes it's the big stuff, but a lot of times it's the little things, like the, you know, how indignant we are as parents if there's a new rule at school and you're marching in to be angry about that, or there was a grade that was not to someone's liking, or a teacher kind of sucked, and we get pretty indignant. On the other hand, I think that that's partly because we were in the best of ways trying to show our kids or make ourselves more comfortable with like taking action when you feel like you've been wronged and it just like somehow got off the rails. And I wonder like how much of that is because we got so invested in the individual.
That's a great point. And this is a really tough country, America, because it's such a great country. And you're thinking, what does that have to do with what I just said? But let me go back to it. One of the glories of this country is how much we value the individual, how much we say each individual has rights and each individual deserves liberty, and there should be no sort of heavy hand of the state that stamps that out. You know, that way lies totalitarianism. That way lies fascism, right? But it is very difficult if you're trying to be fair to everyone in a pluralistic, diverse democracy. It is very difficult to find the right balance of individual rights and the collective good, right? Because there are situations which, if you are exalting and protecting to the utmost my individual rights, you are letting me behave in a way that actually stamps on other people's rights. And, you know, one of the toughest things about this experiment of America is finding that perfect balance. It's also a really tough country. Again, because of one of the things that makes us so glorious and great, there is no democracy of this scale that is this diverse in the history of the world. We can't look back 200 years, 500 years, 1,000 years and say, oh, that's how it's done. That's the precedent. That's how we maintain. We're trying something very different. We're trying something that often runs counter to humans' tribal instincts. And that's tough too. One of the things I think we need to do is, in some sense, cut ourselves a break. We get a lot of stuff wrong. Our march toward a more perfect union is a march through a lot of imperfection. And right now, in this sort of spoiled era of ours, I see a lot of people hating on America. And Jean, forgive me, and I'm sure you know her work really well, and I know her, and I think I'm constantly mispronouncing her surname, which is terrible, it's given how much I respect her, but Jean Twenge, am I saying that correctly?
I think so.
Okay, so Jean Twenge is someone I've interviewed several times over time. I've read several of her books. She was part of a Times Higher Education conference that I organized once. She and I were chatting not that long ago, and it's quoted in my book, The Age of Grievance, about surveys that show this extraordinary thing where if you ask boomers, whether the founding fathers of America are more worthy of respect or condemnation, like the overwhelming majority of them say respect, right? Now, that may be a rosy-eyed view. If you ask much, much younger Americans, an overwhelming majority think there's more to revile about the founding fathers than to respect. I think that's a problem. I understand why they're saying that, and I understand why a rosy view is too simplistic, but it's difficult to have a country and to find our way to a constructive proportional patriotism if there's a generation that's inclined toward that perspective about our own country, which I honestly think is the wrong perspective. I mean, I'm a 59-year-old gay man who grew up in an era that was so much different than this one. I have watched, I mean, in terms of what gives someone hope, what gives someone faith in people, yeah. I have seen in my lifetime a revolution I could never have imagined and for which I am so deeply grateful in the way the overwhelming majority of Americans feel about and treat gay and lesbian people. This is a good country. It is a good country that is often wrong, that struggles to live up to its ideals, that gets there in baby steps at times and in imperfect fits and starts. But I don't want us to give up on that because I think that sort of negativity is one of the fuels of the grievance culture that is paralyzing us.
That is so refreshing. And I so appreciate that. And now a quick break so I can tell you about my sponsors. This podcast is sponsored in part by Active Skin Repair, which is a 1% for the Planet member. They believe personal health and health of the environment are inextricably connected. Active Skin Repair also donates 1% of all sales to grassroots environmental initiatives to protect and restore our natural world. And Active Skin Repair is an all-natural and non-toxic topical solution that's formulated to help repair and heal damaged skin. When it's applied to the skin, Active Skin Repair works by mimicking the natural immune response to help soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. You can use Active Skin Repair to treat such a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. And it's also safe and non-toxic, so it's suitable for use on all skin types, including sensitive skin. And through its 1% for the Planet Giving partnership, Active Skin Repair protects and conserves wildlands through the Conservation Alliance and regenerates marine ecosystems through sea trees. Active Skin Repair is also certified climate and plastic neutral through 1% Giving partners. You can feel really good about this product. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and their commitment to 1% for the planet. And don't forget to use the code HUMAN so you can save 20% off on all Active Skin Repair products. Go for it. This episode is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/humans and get on your way to being your best self. Obviously, we all carry around so many stressors, big and small. And one of the things that I want to make sure everyone has is access to support for your mental health, because healthy parents can raise healthy kids. And therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's not going to solve all of your problems, but it gives you a space. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which I know for busy parents just helps make it one more easy step to taking care of yourself. You fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time. There's no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/humans today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/humans. How can you instill the values, whatever your individual family values are, whatever your community values are, whatever you're hoping to kind of infuse into your household water, and also help your kids be be critical thinkers, maybe even disagree with you. How do you balance that? Because I think about, like, it's really important to me, for example, that my children believe in certain values. There are certain values that just, like, I won't impose them on other people, but let's just say there are certain things where I think I'd be really bummed out if my kids were just completely misaligned there with what I thought was a big part of our household values. And so I want to make sure that I'm living that enough that they know it matters. And that there are certain things, there are certain expectations that I have, that they're not going to go off into the world and do something harmful to another human or whatever it is. But I also want them to know that they're allowed to have a difference of opinion, that they're allowed to question. And I also want them to be able to call me out. But there are just certain things. There are just certain things that I'm like, no, this is unacceptable. And I think that that is really hard for parents to balance, let alone school administrators or politicians or writers or whatever. But it has to be possible, right? Like, there has to be a way to have a certainty about certain values and a capacity for openness and nuance with others. There was a circumstance at a school where there was a celebration of Holi, which is a Hindu holiday. And so parents came and they decorated in the sand some stencils, and swastikas ended up there. And the Jewish students came out and they looked at the ground and they saw swastikas and they were really upset. And then there were some kids who were like, what are swastikas? Because these were elementary school kids. So the kids who knew the swastikas were either Hindu, although there were not very many Hindu students there, or Jewish, of which there were more. And they knew what a swastika was from birth, probably. Mm. And the school administrators didn't know what to do because they wanted to respect that there could be two truths to the swastika, except for it means something different in the United States now. This is now I'm infusing my values because I'm like, full stop, no swastikas, unless you're at a temple where that is clearly, you're walking in and you know that that has one intention and it's a good intention. But in the United States of America or in Europe, if you see a swastika, it's a different meaning now in 2024, and it's really scary. But I felt for that school administrator who was thinking, well, I have to respect multiple perspectives here, and I have to teach the kids to respect multiple perspectives. But then at what point is it like, no, we can't have a swastika. Like, that's just full stop, not okay. And I think those are the moments that are really, really hard.
Right. Well, they're very hard. But in that case, listen, you can't have the swastika. You can't. What's crucial in that situation, so I don't think that one's a tough decision. What's crucial is how you discuss and explain the course of action you're taking. If you explain to those Hindu students who presumably didn't understand how that symbol would be taken, if you explain to them how, I mean, profoundly is not even the right adverb. You need a bigger adverb than that.
Right,
if
right,
you
right.
explain to them how profoundly insulting, threatening, hateful that is to the Jewish students, and because of that, it cannot be used. And then you say to them, and something that would have the same effect on you, something that you would perceive to be that nullifying and threatening and bullying and hateful, we would protect you from that too. And we are not saying that you are terrible people who have done something unforgivable. We're saying that there is a cultural chasm here. There's a cultural divide here, a cultural disconnect that we're educating you about. And we have to take this action to be as respectful to those students as we would be to you in the reciprocal situation, in an analogous situation. I think this stuff is navigable. If you keep your eye on and you keep enunciating the larger principles and don't make this a contest. This isn't the Jewish students versus the Hindu students. This is everybody being folded in to a culture of mutual respect that we all want and that benefits us all.
So what I think is so interesting is obviously I'll give you my perspective just because
maybe it's just to clarify, I'm the grandchild of Holocaust survivors. So like a swastika is a non-negotiable, but I think it's a non-negotiable to everybody, but then that's the kind of story where I have compassion for someone who's like, oh, but also I'm in a culture where everybody then turns it into, well, you're not respecting me, you're harming me, which one is more harmful? And you get into these cycles where it is like a group of people against another group of people versus like we're here together trying to live in harmony and like have respect, and we will protect anybody who's harmed and threatened in that way. In this particular case, I do have to make a judgment call, but I think that this is the kind of thing where it's almost like an SNL skit that would become hard for a school administrator to respond to because they're like frozen.
But let me tell you one of the reasons it becomes harder than it should be, because I don't think that should be a hard situation. I don't think it has to be a hard situation.
Right.
One of the reasons it becomes hard, and I write about this extensively in the book, is because there are so many prior examples of people crying foul when there wasn't much reason to cry foul. So the act of crying foul these days becomes immediately suspect to a lot of people because they have heard so much crying foul. It's like the boy who cried wolf. I mean, I'll give you an example. No reasonable person can say that we live in a post-racist society. No reasonable person can say that there is no racism or that there isn't significant racism in America. No reasonable person can say there isn't significant sexism, and no reasonable person can say that there isn't significant homophobia. But when I was reading columns on the left, when I was seeing on the Twitter posts of people on the left that Brittany Griner was languishing in a Russian prison with no one caring and the U.S. government ignoring her because she was Black, female, and lesbian, that's ridiculous. She was getting more attention than any other political prisoner in my adult lifetime. And you know what? She needed to get attention. That was crazy and unjust and horrifying and terrifying that she was imprisoned in Russia. But what happens is when you have grievance entrepreneurs, when you have indiscriminate activists crying racism, sexism, and homophobia in situations where it doesn't apply, it makes people tune out entirely. So why does the school administrator in the story you just shared, why do they feel so kind of nervous and why do they feel like they're in a minefield? Because of this larger context of all of this crying foul, and it becomes difficult for people to recognize, no, this is a really clear and easy situation. This isn't anyone being oversensitive. You know, this isn't anybody choosing sides. This one is legitimately needs our attention and our redress.
And now a quick break so I can tell you about my sponsors. Okay, so 80 to 90% of Americans suffer from some gut issue: gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, acid reflux. Shall I go on? According to research, 99.9% of the probiotics on the market die in your naturally harsh stomach acid before they get to where they're needed, even the refrigerated ones. And so it makes sense when you think about it. How can a probiotic survive our 98-degree bodies if it can't withstand room temperature? So here's one solution. Just Thrive Probiotic has a proprietary strain that has been third-party clinically tested, and it arrives 100% alive in your gut. It's the only brand with a patented strain, HU36, which produces antioxidants in the gut. It's safe for all ages, so even kids can take it. Pregnant or nursing moms can take it, anybody. The capsules can be opened and sprinkled into food or drink and not lose their potency. It's just easy. And it's antibiotic resistant. And this is actually a very important thing to take while on antibiotics to maintain the health of gut flora. And this is extra important for women. So if you're ready to take control and live your healthiest, you can get 20% off your first 90-day bottle of Just Calm and Just Thrive Probiotic today. Visit justthrivehealth.com and use the promo code HUMANS. While you're there, you can check out their other clinically backed products. Take control with Just Thrive. This episode is brought to you in part by Saks.com. Saks.com is an easy way at your fingertips to find style inspiration for fun, meaningful, situation-specific moments. Saks.com is making it easy for me to put together outfits for my book tour. Basically, I want to be able to wear things in different ways multiple times because I don't need a brand new outfit for every single event, but I want to have fun and look put together. So if you want an easy way to go shopping, go to Saks.com. They have instant inspiration for finding a new look, refreshing your closet, and it's easy to navigate. You can plug in by size, by price, by shape, by type of clothing. So if you're like me and you're looking for great work outfits, new investment pieces that make you feel really good and really comfortable when you have to put yourself out there, go to Saks.com. It's so easy to find your new vibe. You can shop Saks.com for everything on your agenda, whether it is a Chloe blazer for a book tour or a breezy Zimmerman dress for date night. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
It's not have no grievances. It's not don't call out things when they are really harmful. It's just let's not make this so ridiculous that we now don't listen when it really matters. Because I feel like there's a whole generation of just shut down.
Yes. Let's not each of us have only one lens through which we see the world. And let's not use that lens to evaluate and discuss every situation, regardless of whether that lens is the appropriate one, and regardless of whether that lens is showing us truth or a distortion. You know, there are so many people in, you know, and part of it is a product of social media and the way that kind of sorts people and amplifies it. Part of it is people have their kind of ideological activist brands that distinguish them and give them a kind of distinct place in the world. So many people go out there and they see sexism everywhere, regardless of the situation. They see the deep state, if they're on the right, everywhere, regardless of the situation. It is a legitimate grievance. If you are someone living between the coasts in a state that has been profoundly affected by the closing of factories and the outsourcing of jobs, if you are a working class person without a college education, who has seen that kind of economic devastation in community and has seen drug overdose deaths skyrocket, it is legitimate to say, I'm not sure the federal government sees me. I'm not sure my fellow Americans see me and know what I'm going through. And I just kind of want to make sure the pain of my community and some of the solutions that might be out there for it, I want to make sure those get proper attention. That's legitimate. What's illegitimate is to travel from that to they're rigging the voting machines and the 2020 election was stolen and I've got to go storm the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. You know, and likewise with the Brittany Griner thing we were just talking about, it is legitimate to say, I live in a society with an unacceptable degree of racism and sexism and homophobia, and I want to push back against that. Legitimate, we need to hear you. We need your voice. We need your passion. Illegitimate to say Brittany Griner was the victim of all of those things. And so many Americans travel so quickly from the realm of the legitimate to the realm of the illegitimate and the overwrought. And it makes it very, very difficult for us as a society to pay attention to what we need to pay attention to and not just kind of get lost in the din and the noise.
How do you get your students to have like the kind of intellectual and emotional robustness that allows for this way of thinking and acting in the world? Like, right, you can't really be lazy.
I don't know that I get them there. I I'd have to do a study and see them 5 and 10 years from now.
I think you should. Yeah.
But I try to get them there by having discussions exactly like the one you and I are having right now, you know, by asking them to look at some of the behaviors of people with whom they are in ideological alignment and asking themselves, in this case, was that appropriate and was it constructive and productive? And in this case, was it not? And we have discussions about if you can find those sorts of perspectives. And if you can come at things with that sense of proportionality, with that kind of nuance, I never hear that word in American life anymore, right? There are all of these words that feel to me like dirty words today that should be our North Stars. Nuance, compromise, common ground, you know? What happened to those things?
I'm afraid actually to say those things sometimes because nuance to me is the word that we need most right now. And when it comes out of my mouth, I see rage in people. And so I'm like, never mind. I'm going to just go back in my cave because it's scary when louder sometimes just, you know, is so right. This is writing quotes, but we're not on video.
Yeah, no, we have this notion that the way to be pure is to be unnuanced, you know, is not to wonder about why your adversaries feel the way they do, you know, not to investigate that, but to just kind of condemn it. That somehow has become equated with a good passion and a laudatory purity. But I don't think it is. You know, I think I always tell my students at the start of the semester, you're going to hear one sentence from me more often than any other. And that sentence is, it's complicated. Because most things in life are complicated, right? I feel, I look at a lot of things going on and I see ambiguity. I investigate my own truest feelings about a lot of situations, and I have some ambivalence. Those also have become dirty words, and big ambiguity, ambivalence, uncertainty.
Yeah,
I think they're facts of true human existence. But I think, and this kind of brings us to a word I know you wanted to return to, I think this is about humility. I think we're in the midst of a crisis of humility. I think people don't understand that there are other people around them that have just as much right to their opinions and to the space they occupy and to the dreams that they dream. They have just as much of a right to those as you do to yours. They deserve your consideration. You are not right about everything, right? I mean, to believe that your conclusion in a situation and the value that you've derived from it. I mean, and by the way, there are exceptions to this. I have no patience for someone who is a florid racist and belongs to whatever, you know, the Ku Klux Klan or its modern equivalent. I'm not saying let's extend a great measure of grace and understanding to that person, but shy of those extremes, we need to be humble and say, I don't know that I'm 100% right. I don't know that I have assessed this situation and come to conclusions that are irrefutably correct. But you need some humility to do that. And I feel like we no longer preach, practice, or hold high humility.
You know, you said something, two things. First of all, when I read what you said, that humility is the antidote to grievance, and I'm actually going to read a sentence that I just thought was so clarifying. Well, this is your sentence, so you probably have heard it before. While grievance blows our concerns out of proportion, humility puts them in perspective. While grievance reduces the people with whom we disagree to caricature, humility acknowledges that they're every bit as complex as we are, with as much of a stake in creating a more perfect union. What I think is, it's so beautifully said, everything is so beautifully said, but more importantly, we're not talking about these extreme versions of just behaviors that are unacceptable. Like you said, we're extending that to the KKK or the equivalent, or we're extending that to someone who says all of this group of people should die.
Right.
But I think that somehow in the loss of the nuance of all of the conversations going on, from the election coming up to what's going on in Gaza and Israel to what's going on in the United States and classrooms and guns and abortion and everything, is that for the majority of people, we're not talking about the extremes, but that's what it seems like we're talking to. And so having capacity for curiosity and compassion and humility somehow has turned into like you're giving permission to these extreme versions of nobody thinks this, we're not talking about this. This is clearly unacceptable.
Right.
Somehow it like brings out those defenses. And I find it very disheartening. So I'm hoping you can kind of reframe it to hopeful.
Well, most of us, I mean, the overwhelming majority of us live between those extremes. And so when you and I are saying Let's try to find a measure of grace for one another. Let's try to practice some humility. Let's try to understand before we condemn. We are talking about, going to get put a just kind of any number on it. We're talking about the 80% of us who live between those two extremes. And where we should find hope and what we need to remember is social media, traditional media, so much in our lives gives us the impression that those extremes are much more prominent than they are, partly because they just shout that much louder. They are not most of us. And so we can find a way to behave and to treat one another that is sane because they are not most of us. And we're living with this kind of optical and auditory illusion that they are the majority of Americans. They are not. And if we keep that in mind, then I think we can preach and practice and live some of these virtues that you and I are talking about.
One of the things that strikes me is being afraid to say the wrong thing is also kind of paralyzing. And maybe part of this is like, let's just give it a whirl and have a generous interpretation or an assumption that we are at least 80% of us are trying to be on the same team here.
No, that is a wonderful point that I'm glad you brought up because I would have hated for us to finish this conversation and not get there. I think we need to say to young people, and it's one of the things I say in my classroom, give everybody some wiggle room here. Give them enough leeway that as they, because so many of us, I mean, me right now, I'm babbling, I'm mumbling, you know, I'm trying to find, I'm a professional communicator and I struggle in many situations, including probably for the duration of our conversation, to find the words I really want to say. Because our brains are flawed mechanisms, and what we're trying to say and what we mean and what comes out of our mouths is not always a clean line. We need to remember that, and we need to ask young people to remember that when discussions are being had in the classroom, you know, when they're in the public square. Too often, somebody utters four wrong syllables, and they're met with condemnation. To use the vernacular, they're canceled. We need to kind of say to everyone, you don't want the stakes of a poorly expressed thought or a misuttered syllable to be that high. And you don't want them to be that high for you. And so you can't make them that high for somebody else. Because, you know, that is not grace, that's not humility, that is nothing that is going to facilitate the kind of civil discourse that is key to this country holding together, quite frankly.
We can all go home in conversations with that in mind. Like that alone, I think, could change the game for young people if they could actually just, you know, have a real conversation and not have it have the stakes of this might be the last time I can say something.
Here's hoping. Yeah.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.